Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
When I was young. Hello and welcome to Real Recovery. Glad you joined us tonight. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio and across the way, George P. Fraser. That's the team. We got Ryan on the board tonight. We're looking forward to another award-winning episode, George. I can hardly wait for tonight's show.
Yeah, we got a great guy coming on. We both know.
Yep.
Great story. Fun guy. Really a kind man.
Indeed. Indeed. And he's got a story to tell. You're not going to want to miss this. And before we bring him on, George, we always take a little time to not only say hi to the listeners and thank them for listening, but also we want to take a step out of the 12 steps and remind people that it's like good calisthenics to do if you're trying to keep your recovery game in shape.
Yeah, it helps us work out our plan. And tonight we want to talk about step three. We made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand him. Of course, we understand him to be Jesus, Bill. We don't want a God of our understanding. We want a God of creation of the universe, the world, and us. And I think people a lot of times say, well, my God would do this and that. That's really an extension of themselves, which is why they're in recovery in the first place, but that's a whole nother show. Mm-hmm. Here's what I wanted to talk about with you, Billy. We have pretty good routines set up for our walk. We've made a decision, of course, in step one to not use anymore. And really, when we make a decision to turn our will and life over the care of God as we understand him, we got out of the decision-making business. You need to get a board of directors of friends who are Christians or in recovery that you can bounce things off of. Because one thing we know by getting into recovery, we really don't know what we want because what we wanted to do was killing us. We really don't know what's good for us. And when I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, I'm going to ask his directions in all things. What do you want me to do? And of course, later on in step 11, we pray only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. But Bill, I see more and more in my own life as we get older and people that we know are getting into recovery, the big mountain of excitement that people get from using. I remember the band Loverboy, I think from the 80s. Everybody's working for the weekend, right? When I was using, I couldn't enjoy the rest of the week because it wasn't the weekend. And instead of getting that big explosive event, for me, what I learned, and it's by default, the contentment of enjoying all the little things in life that added together beat out the big explosion mountaintop experience on the weekends. And I feel a lot better than I did coming down the mountain the next day. You know what I'm saying? And I think the godly contentment of knowing that you're in God's will, that he approves what you're doing because he designed it and is guiding you, it's priceless, and you don't have anything to compare it to. And anything outside of that will not be good enough. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, if I look at step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Of course, like you said, George, we understand this to be Jesus. I can say with confidence, most people have trusted someone who turned out to be untrustworthy in their life. And so I think intellectually we think God can care for us, but what about actually trusting him to do it? So as we made this decision to turn our will and lives over, are we really doing it? That's the question.
You know, I was just thinking that most of my friends are like I am, so I don't trust anybody. But I think we can make the mistake, Bill, of because all people are fallen, totally trusting people is tough. And we can say that, well, if I can't trust people, I can't trust God. And the opposite couldn't be, you know, be more true, and that God is true in his promises, but I think he's also true about going to hell. And I want to take God at his word and learn to do that. And I think that's the whole key. My mentor, Denny, always tells me, do you trust God? And I go, of course I do. He goes, well, then start acting like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to send somebody over to talk to Denny. You know what I'm saying? But that's exactly it. And if I say I'm a Christian and I'm following Jesus, is there evidence to back that up? Does my life really look like it? And if there's some part of my life where it doesn't, Bill, with his help, I can change it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. when you're addicted, you can't.
Right. When you make a decision to turn your will and your life over, that is just a part of the process. That's not the whole process. You actually have to do it. It'd be like, George, if we talked about going to a hockey game, which would be something we'd like doing, we'd be talking about going, but then eventually we'd have to buy tickets, and eventually we'd have to get in a car and actually show up to the arena to watch the game. So it's all a process.
We don't have to go together.
No, I prefer we don't, but you know what I'm saying.
I do. So that's why we watch it on TV. So where was that analogy going?
Well, I was saying when you make a decision to turn your will over and your life over to the care of God, that's just part of the process. You have to do it, not just think about it or talk about it. That's where I was going.
That's the three frogs on a log in the swamp.
You got that right. Yeah, three frogs. One decides to jump. How many are left? And the answer is?
Three.
Yeah.
Took me a few turns to get that one, Bill.
Yeah, I know.
That's because he made a decision. He didn't do anything.
Right. That's the kind of high-level thinking you get on Real Recovery. So we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to bring on our guest, Brian. And we both know Brian, and so we're looking forward to connecting with him again after many years. He's got quite a story. So you are listening to Real Recovery. Bill and George, Ryan's on the board. We'll be right back.
Saying you can get it wrong and still think that it's all right.
Welcome back to the big show. Glad you joined us tonight, Bill and George. We got, of course, Ryan on the board. And, George, I'm looking forward to tonight's going to be a little bit of a Salvation Army reunion for the three of us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. You were program director, I think, at the time when we first met our guest. Is that correct?
I don't remember that because I'm old.
Yeah.
It's Bill, right?
It's Bill. And you probably remember learning how to ride a bike and then being on the show today. That's probably everything in the middle is kind of a gray area, isn't it?
I'm wondering what the dog's name is here in the room. Yeah.
Dog name is Bob. Anyway, let's bring on our guest, Brian. Brian has been a friend of ours for years, and he lives in the Pittsburgh area. And we're awfully glad to be reconnecting with him after several years. Brian, welcome.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Nice to talk to you guys today.
Yeah, Brian, when I first met you in Minneapolis, there was something about your engaging personality, I must say. You had... and you had the brains, you had faith, you had desire, you had all kinds of good stuff going in your recovery. And that got my attention right away. I'd love to hear your story about how all of it started.
Sure. You mean back to what it used to be like before what happened, what it's like now?
Well, of course. I think that helps all of us to see, you know, where you were before and then where you are today. And it's always an interesting story.
Sure. I'll make it the Cliff Notes version. I was kind of born with a golden spoon, and things came easy for me, both in athletics and academics and so forth. One thing I've learned over the years is one thing I didn't learn is how to be intimate. And I'm not speaking sexually. I'm speaking just comfortable with intimacy. And I think a lot of that difficulty, though well hidden at the time, served a lot of problems, was a force of problems for me down the road. And when I would start feeling uncomfortable, I found the chemical was the solution to that. So, of course, I grew up maybe going to church on Easter and Christmas, but I would not say that I was a Christian. I would not say that the Lord was part of my daily life or daily thoughts. and I lived as such. Things got a little more difficult for me when I went to Penn State, as George had mentioned a moment ago. All of a sudden, the reins were let go, and I found myself to where I was fully focused on having the best time I could for those 4 years. Wine and women, you'd say. Mm-hmm. And it caused the usual problems, as you would suspect. My performance at Penn State was so bad that I wasn't even sure if I graduated. I actually told my parents that commencement was canceled because I didn't know if I was going to be called up. And fortunate for me, about 3 weeks later after commencement, I got my diploma in the mail and started my career. And then it's almost like I did a reset. So now I'm 22. I'm back in Pittsburgh. After a short stint as a financial advisor, the market crash of 87 happened, and my dad needed someone to take over the running of his insurance agency, which is State Farm Insurance. I did that for 7 years, and I was pretty successful, but I also if I was working for a regular 9-to-5 employer, I certainly would have been fired, but I had a lot of enabling going on in my life. Took advantage of it, and something happened to me around 1990, and that was I had a very serious girlfriend. I met her in 86 at Penn State. We dated for 3 years. Finally, she couldn't take the drinking anymore, so she broke up with me and started dating my best friend. My response to that in 1990, which is the beginning of my legal problems, I got 4 DUIs in 1 year. That was 1990 and 1991. Depression had set in. I'd been diagnosed with ADHD, but as I said all along, and I probably still say today, I think ADHD is actually an asset to my career, which is in business development, mergers, acquisitions, and recruiting. But the alcohol was there, the consequences were there, but through high-priced attorneys and everything, I kind of skated through the system. I wasn't even incarcerated after 4 DUIs. Then in 1994, my dad didn't show up at work one day, and I went over to his house, much to the nudging of my secretary. She said, I'm really concerned. Let's go over. I said, he doesn't come to work all the time. And she said, this one's different. He doesn't call in. He hasn't called in. So we went over to a house in 1994, September, and found him dead. And I haven't said this publicly much, but I recently gave my testimony on a podcast, and I said it then, and my plan, my belief in God and where he has me is my story is now not something to bang over my head and beat myself up with, but for others to maybe benefit and give hope to the hopeless. But at that moment, standing over my father's dead body, the first thing I thought about in 1994 was the money I inherited. And I did inherit the money, and as you can imagine, someone in active addiction, which not only included alcohol, but cocaine, ecstasy, and marijuana, I went out and I spent about $300,000 or $400,000 over 2 or 3 years, finally had to get a job, moved to Florida, racked up a couple more DUIs in 1998 and 1996. So now I have 6. I still didn't serve a moment in jail. Nothing was really changing me. And then I started my own company. It was car wash equipment sales in 1998. So in 2000, I lived in a big lakefront home in Winter Park, Florida. I had a car for every occasion. I had my own company. I was on house arrest. I remember running my company from house arrest, doing cocaine and drinking alcohol every day. And there's a point to this. It's probably the peak of my assets. If you looked at a timeline of my life and you based it simply on how the world sees life, they would think 2000 was probably the peak of my life, even as I sit here today. That's how the world would see it. What I learned was it's probably the lowest point of my life. And that resulted in January 14th of 2001. I grabbed a friend's car, went out to strip clubs, got drunk into a blackout, I proceeded to get on Interstate 4, which goes east-west in the heart of Florida, right through Orlando. I started heading eastbound, but I was doing it in the westbound lanes. About 10:30 at night, I hit a van head-on. In that van was a 26-year-old mom and four kids, aged 6, 4, 2, and 2 months. Their van went upside down, went over the embankment, and they all walked away. Walked away without a scratch. I had some pretty significant head damage, which will come into play later in my story, but I was released from the hospital the next day. I was out free for 8 months. I started going to AA in 2001 after the accident, and by August I was called to report to jail, where I immediately found the Lord, or I should say the Lord found me. And what I mean by that, it's a very specific story. There was one Christian program left in all of Florida in the jail system. And in lieu of working at the jail, your job was to spend 6 hours a day under Christian teaching. So we had three two-hour classes. One was at 7 to 9, one was 1 to 3, and one was 6 to 8 p.m., where volunteers came in and taught the word for 6 hours every day, 6 days a week. At that time, I had a very interesting struggle with doctrine. I was under a very charismatic teacher who taught a lot about the Holy Spirit, but didn't teach much about Jesus. But, geez, men were falling on the floor. Everybody was excited and everything. But God put a few men into my life that they would sit with me for hours and show me the word and show me the truth of the word, show me the verses about, you know, struggling with the Lord and suffering for the Lord and how you can do that with joy. And I remember being so confused sitting in Orange County Jail, and I remember being on my knees one day in the middle of the dorm, just so confused. And my knees are on the ground, and I'm leaning on the chair seat, and I'm just like, God, please help me. Please give me discernment. I'm so confused. And one thing led to another, and it ended up that this teacher, a lot of things happened that we don't have time for today, but in the end, I came against this teacher. He was teaching 6 hours a day there, six hours a week, 3 2-hour sessions, and it was a moment where the Lord used me, and he forced me into the word because I was so confused. I ended up being so-called president of the dorm, and I actually came back to my bunk one day, and it was all packed up. They were going to throw me in solitary confinement. This is 2003, for what they said was attempting to incite a riot over this teacher. Well, it's so ended that when I went off to prison, because in Florida, if you get a year or more, you go to prison. I did 9 months in the county. I ended up getting 2 years. I found out a couple weeks after I left the prison that he was removed permanently for the Orange County Jail. And I say that to say it's put me in a position in my life where I take the truth of the word, the inerrancy of the word, and the importance of sound doctrine very important to me. It always has been. And it was formed when I couldn't even name the books of the Bible. So I was thrown into the fire that way. I went off to prison. The Lord surrounded me with great men of God. And while I was at prison, one of the guards was murdered at another prison. And I say that to say that they removed all after work programs, including the chapel. Everything was closed. So we opened a church on the prison yard. And we had a worship leader, and we had teachers, including myself. And as I say all that to say, on a timeline of my life, you would look at 2002 to 2004 as the worst moment of my life. I'm 58 years old now. I've had successful careers, and I can absolutely say that prison was the most peaceful, contented time of my life. It's never been more than that, and it's never been before that or after. I've never had 2 years like that. And what I learned about that was when you're close to the Lord, when you're in His Word, when you're fellowshipping with other men, the geography doesn't matter. I was on the wrong side of the barbed wire, and it didn't matter. I had full peace, full joy that I've never experienced to this day. And so I got out, and there was an expression in prison. I got out in 2004, May. There was an expression in prison called the prison of want. It's no matter what you have, you just want a little more for peace. And I fell back into that trap within 4 or 5 years. Again, I remember I was sitting on my couch, riding my bike to my telemarketing job, sleeping on my parents' couch, riding my bike, going to AA meetings. And I'd say to myself, if I just got a little better job, I'd be happy. And I got that job, which ended up being my career. And then I got a car, and then I got a place of my own. So things started falling into place. And of course, walking down the bad road, not fellowshipping with other brothers, not spending time in the Word, I fell away. There's no doubt about it. And the consequences were extreme. And that's what landed me in the in Minneapolis. I went there initially just for a program. Ended up when I came back to Florida, I had no ground to stand on. The program was not faith-based. It did not bring me back to the Lord. I mean, I was going to church, but, you know, showing up somewhere for an hour a week isn't a spiritual walk. You're not growing. You're not building spiritual muscles. I was just showing up to get my, get out of hell free card checked, which doesn't work. So that landed me in Minneapolis in 2010, which is where I met John and George, Bill and George. And I spent a year at the Salvation Army, and I recently went back and pursued a degree in psychology. And one of my big things now is I believe that our marginalized people are being terribly oppressed under the auspice of kind words and fake racism and so forth. And they're not being given the tools to lead a life of well-being. And in my studies, I did actually a mini thesis on this. I learned about the self-determination theory of motivation. And it says anybody needs three things to be motivated in life and to achieve a life of well-being. So whether we're talking about the guy in the Sally or the woman not getting where she wants to in her career, she's stagnant, or a failed marriage, it could go into any ways. And of course, God's in this equation. We all know that. But in the terms of academia, you need healthy relationships, you need acquired skill sets, and you need self-confidence. I like to make it the three E's: empowerment, encouragement, and equipping. And you need those three things. And it got me thinking about the Sally at the time. And this was just my studies started about 2 years ago.
Yeah, Brian, I'm gonna have you hold that thought only because we need to take a break. And then we'll come back, and then George and I will pepper you with questions. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We'll be right back. Joining us tonight, you're listening to Real Recovery, hosted by Bill and George. Ryan's on the board. We have a great show tonight. If you just joined us, you're going to have to start from the beginning. You can always go to myfaithradio.com, check out the podcast. It will be there on the Real Recovery show page. George, I have to say this is an amazing start to this award-winning episode of Real Recovery with our friend Brian. He went through a lot of his story in the last 20 minutes.
It's fabulous. And as I said on the break, I think when you tell your parents commencement's canceled, that's a talent. You know, you can't teach somebody to come up with that. But I guess what I was wondering, after you came up here to go to the retreat, Brian, and then you went back home and used right away and you came up to Minneapolis, how did you get sober? What was the process like for people that are listening tonight? I know you're a great teacher. And for people listening that are struggling or guys like me that want to improve our recovery, how did that process take place? What were you doing? And what did you do to make it good enough for you to stay in it?
Well, the first thing was, as I mentioned, I was really falling away from the Lord. And the center of my life has to be my relationship with Jesus. And I don't believe that's something we're called to do alone. So it starts out with getting right with the Lord, repenting, finding healthy fellowship. I found it at George. You may recall I was going to Bethlehem Baptist, and I found healthy fellowship there. I started different pursuits. I replaced the drinking with other pursuits, mainly running marathons and outdoor activities, biking and so forth. I was going to a lot of AA meetings. I developed the equipping of the equipment of skills was never an issue for me, but the issue was healthy relationships and a self-belief. Because what I had to overcome, George, was the shame of all this, the shame of what I did to that family, who, by the way, is another story, but we're friends now. That woman and the four children that I knocked over the side of the road, we're friends. I got right. I had to accept the fact of the thoughts I had when I found my father dead. It was a matter of clearing out the past, accepting that I can't change the past, going to the Lord with it, giving it to Him, and surrounding myself with healthy relationships. I've always failed when I isolated myself. I heard it said in the rooms of AA one time, the most dangerous neighborhood you can spend time in is the 6 inches between your ears, and I believe that to be the case. So in a way, those three E's I mentioned earlier is what I had to do in my own life. And the Lord has always been very faithful in putting men of God in my path and men of healthy recovery in my path. And frankly, I had to lean on God and those people for quite a while.
And once you left rehab up here the second time, how did you walk that out when you left? Because I know a lot of the guys that we know do great until they graduate, and they fail to set goals after that. And I'm wondering how you executed that.
Well, I didn't have success. I had success right away, but I had another period of struggle. And the same thing happened. It started in like 2013, 14. I was out of the Sally now for 3 or 4 years. I had a good career, the same career I found in the Sally. I was working with a company we were acquired from a firm downtown. I started isolating a little more. And I ended up moving back to Pittsburgh, where I had family and friends. And it was there I found a challenge that existed that I didn't know. And I mentioned a head injury. Here in 2016, I was diagnosed with a traumatic brain injury of the frontal lobe. So I had been dealing with from 2002 to 2016 with an undiagnosed traumatic brain injury. And, someone might say, well, that's real tough break. No, it wasn't. It was relief and to understand why I was still having some issues. So you have to, with recovery and even with mental health, because I also have bipolar one, with recovery, with mental health, it's the same thing. You don't get weeks off. You don't get months off. You don't take a whole summer off. I'm not saying it's hard work, but perseverance is the word I like. You just have to keep persevering. You just have to keep getting up. You have to keep surrounding yourself with good people. You have to be close to God. You have to be doing those spiritual habits that keep you strong, because the devil wants to get you alone. And I have fallen back into that. And so, my life has been very interesting, even the last 4 or 5 years. But what God has done to me is He's humbled me in a very good way. He's taken away some of my desires, let's say for material goods, that were there, that was a struggle. If you're pursuing money over God, we know where that gets you. The point is, it might sound cliche-ish, but until you totally surrender to what God's will for your life is and what he wants, and if you're still having idols in these other areas, it's still going to be difficult. If you put yourself in his arms and you allow him to work and you continue to build your faith, then he's going to take care of you. He's going to make those changes in your life that you need so you can wake up the next day and it doesn't sound appealing to escape from all your problems. You persevere through your problems. You can have joy through your problems, not joy when you get out of your problems.
That's very, very well said. Bill, we go to the book of James. I think it's right at the beginning. Consider it all joy when you face trials of many kind. And I don't know about you, Billy, but that's not how I take it when it starts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to end it. But as we look on our lives, if God hadn't allowed the addiction in our lives, Brian, I'm not saved.
I totally agree with that statement. I look at my past as an asset, and for decades, it was something to punish me with. And it's totally an asset now. That's why I'm here with you today. When I got this diagnosis, I was managing director of a $1 billion firm here in Pittsburgh in charge of mergers and acquisitions. And it only took me about 6 months to get all my faculties back. And the Lord said to me at that time, you're not going back to your career. He spoke it through a doctor, but she said, you have all your faculties back. We don't think you should go back to that career. So I've dedicated the last 4 years of servicing the Lord, and I don't even live on my own. I still, because of my brain injury, I have to live with my mother right now. I work with autistic children. I drive a 9-year-old car after a 10-year license suspension. I love to shop at consignment stores. I have, without a doubt, I told you the most peaceful years of my life were prison. I'm living the most peaceful years on the right side of the barbed wire right now. And I don't have the fancy title on a business card. I don't have the fancy home. I don't have the fancy wife. I don't have the fancy car. I don't have the fancy, well, I have the fancy suits, but they're all in a closet. I'm at total peace. I still don't know where he's taking me with this. I believe I'm supposed to help men like that are in the Sally, or the homeless, the addicted, the mental health. I believe he gave me that story to encourage others, because I can show them my prison ID. I can tell them stories about where I've been. I had years, decades of hopelessness, of shame, and it doesn't have to be that way. No matter what the news is, it doesn't have to be that way. If you're with the Lord, that's all that matters, and that's how he's created us.
Did you get the brain injury in the car crash when you hit the van?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
So that went undiagnosed for years, huh?
It did. I had it when I was in the Sally, even. When I'm in controlled environments, I'm pretty much a superstar. The more freedom I got, the more trouble I had. And these were episodic. They still, to this day, they really don't know how a frontal lobe brain injury and bipolar one work together. There's just not enough cases out there of it, but I would have episodes, and I would cycle through an episode about every 6 months to a year, and they would last 4 or 5 days, and they've gotten fewer and fewer, I don't blame anything on it, because like I say, it's all part of my story here, but it was something I had for 15 years undiagnosed. And I went to 3 neurologists. It took over a year. And the final one was a cognitive neurologist specialist at the University of Pittsburgh. And she knew within 10 minutes what was wrong with me.
Wow. Do you still work out?
I do. I just did a big fitness competition. I do boot camp every morning at 5:30 a.m. now. So, yeah, I'm in good physical shape. I'm in good mental health shape. I'm in good spiritual shape, though I am in the process of switching churches. But that's a good thing. The Lord has led me to another church. I'm excited about that. So the spiritual life, the physical life, the social life, They're all pretty stable now. And you know what they're not? They're not all bipolar, one manic over the top. And that's what I was always trying to feed that devil. And the word I like, I love what Paul says in Philippians about one of the most misquoted Bible verses in all of Scripture is, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Because if you read the context of that, it's talking about I can live in high times or low times. I can do all things through Christ strength. It's not I can dunk a basketball even though I'm 5'4", slow old white guy. It doesn't mean that. It means that I can live under any circumstances and I can persevere and succeed no matter what's thrown at me if I'm with the Lord.
Mm. Brian, one of George's favorite questions he's already asked you is, how did you do it? And you gave a great answer when you talked about being in fellowship with other godly men. My question is, when you are doing that, what does that look like when you wake up in the morning? Do you wait to hear from somebody? Do you initiate and send out a text message to somebody saying, it's important that we connect at some point today, or I'm looking forward to a meeting later, or how is that fellowship working?
Well, it's very interesting. It's all part of why I'm switching churches. So I guess my vice, if you will, is cigar smoking. And there's a cigar club here in my part of town of Pittsburgh called Club Leaf and Bean. And my pastor at my former church told me about it. The pastors at my church always like to share a cigar every once in a while. And he told me about it. And I got here, and here the managing director of this place is a pastor at another church, the one I'm switching to. Well, it ends up that about 10 members out of 100 are all Christians. One leads the worship at this church, the same church that the pastor's head of. So we have kind of turned what is a private cigar club here in Pittsburgh to an unofficial house of the Lord. And I have that, and that's, it's the fellowship I'm getting. Bill, to answer your question, what kind of interesting was, I was going to church, I was serving church, but I didn't feel I was part of a church. I've had a lot of decisions in my life the past couple of years, and I wasn't finding those brothers to go to. And so now, yes, I have that group, and I found them at all. God works in mysterious ways. I found a group of men, of like-minded men, pursuing the holiness of God in a cigar club. And this is a place where we meet. I'm actually talking to you from our conference room right now.
Okay.
Bill, I love this. Put a cross on the roof and write the whole thing off, Brian.
Right.
You know, make the cigar club a church.
Not to mention.
I have a lot of friends who go to that. And a lot of the guys are recovery guys. Okay. But your question, Bill, is a good one. One of the things I hear, Brian, you do stuff. You don't sit around and think about it. You got a 5:30 boot camp every day. I'm sure there'd be one for at noon for us, Bill. But 5:30, and you get going every day. I'm sure you're in the Word before that. Is that fair?
Sure. Oh, yeah. I wake up at 4, first thing I do.
And, Bill, when people tell us their recovery program didn't work for them, I like to tell them, you're supposed to work for it.
Yeah.
You got to do something.
I love the 4 a.m. wake up. I love the getting into the Word and the workout. That's a great way to start the day. And when I hear that is what a person's regimen is, I think, boy, that's a guy making some really good choices.
And, you know, it truly doesn't become work. We do say, and you do have to work for it, and certainly we know that there's a time where those adjustments to change aren't easy. You're not doing it every morning. It sounds better to hit the snooze and so forth. But there comes a time where it's a joyful time. You look forward to it. I have a lot of favorite teachers, and I get their devotions, and I start off the morning. They're all emailed to me by 4:30 a.m. I read those. Then I created my own Bible through a year plan. It's not all the books. You can custom make your own. I did that for this year. I'm just out of Proverbs, and now I'm into Luke. And so I spend time there every day. I'm at the gym by 5:30. I'm home at 6:30 because it's a 45-minute workout, and ready to start my day. I'm usually fellowshipping with guys here in the morning because I have the other thing is I'm on disability, so I'm on fixed income. I have been since my diagnosis. I still can work a little bit, and I work with autistic children, but I can only make $1,000 a month. So I am on SSDI, and the beauty of that is, sure, it's a lot less income than I was used to back in the day, but it's also a lot more time to give, to volunteer, to spend time with him. So, he had to put me in the right heart place. I'm not a man of patience. I'm not a man of sitting still. And he's taken all of that anxiety and these needs and wants and desires, and he's allowed me to be peaceful where I am. And that's really important. Mm-hmm. And only God can make those changes in you, even with a brain injury and bipolar.
Yeah, we'll take a little break. And talking to Brian, what a story. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill and George, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. So glad to have Brian as our guest tonight. Bill, George, we have Ryan at the board. Quite a story. George, I think when I was kind of chuckling, thinking about Brian's cigar club, thinking, 50 years ago or so, or 60 years ago, who would have been a member? Probably C.S. Lewis.
C.S. Lewis, absolutely.
Yeah, he was an avid cigar smoker.
Yes.
Yeah. So, George, I love the way you always drill down to saying, how are you walking it out? Because I know when people tune into Real Recovery, if they are caught in the middle of a struggle and they're scratching their head as to how they're going to do it, you always encourage our guests to say, how did you do it? And it really sounds like Brian and the steps he has taken would be a textbook formula for a good recovery.
Yeah, and there's one thing there, Bill, as in your walk, when you have a 4:30 wake-up call every day to get into the Word, hopefully has a lot of coffee like we do, and then the 5:30 workout, the night before, you're going to be in bed early.
Oh, yeah.
And what our life does is that the psychologists call it a subordination of desires, in that we have a desire and we have an appointment with God at 4:30 and a workout at 5:30. When the thought comes, and one of the recovery books talks about the obsession is lifted, it is, but the thoughts come back. I've got a good reason to not entertain the thoughts because I've got things I want to get done. And he talked about earlier about not going into his own head. That's a very dangerous neighborhood, your thoughts alone. A lot of people have too much idle time on their hands in recovery because your using took a lot of time. And when you get out and you're not using, you got a lot of time. So he locks that down. And I just think that's great, Brian.
Well, like I say, I give all the credit to the Lord, and it's not phony humility. He changed me in these areas. And you're right, George. I go to bed about 8:30 every night to get up at 4. And it's there's an expression, nothing good happens after midnight. Well, I'd say for me, nothing good happens after 9 p.m. So it's a life I very, I think we all pursue contentment. I just love that word, as I've already said. I just love that word because it has nothing to do about the geography or the bank account or the clothes or the house or the title on your business card. Contentment is about being at peace where you are, not in the prison of want. I'm not like, you can't get saved with plus works. It's Jesus and Jesus alone. Well, contentment isn't contentment, but I need one more thing. It's just contentment. And it didn't happen overnight, but he molded me into this life and put people in my life and a desire in my life to make me where it's not work to do this, though. But at first it is. And I, you know, I wouldn't recommend someone to just start getting up at 4 a.m. tomorrow, order 12 devotions and expect to be working out at 5:30 a.m. and think they'll stick with it. It didn't happen for me that way. It slowly molded over several years. And by doing it in his timing, I also got the gift of contentment.
Mm-hmm. George, may I ask the next question?
Go ahead.
Good. Brian, when you are in your disciplines, and I'm thinking of when you were in prison, I'm thinking you were in the center of God's will, and you were in prison.
Absolutely.
And I always say, when you are in the center of God's will, you're exactly where he wants you. When you're not there, you are in the land of affliction, because when you are outside of God's will, count on the affliction coming nonstop.
There's no doubt about it, and that's exactly how I felt. In fact, I always joke, and this is too long of a story for the time we have left, but there's probably seven key things that happened to me in prison, starting trying to get out on bail and not getting sent to prison and go into certain camps, blah, blah, blah. And I laugh because along the way, I never got what I wanted, and he gave me peace and showed me why every single way. The last one was, I was taking a bus back to Orlando from my prison in the Panhandle, and I knew I was coming to Orlando for work release for my last 6 months. The bus stopped in Gainesville, and I'm in shackles, and they called my name, which meant I wasn't going to work release. And for the last 6 months, I was just going to a different prison. This is after everybody telling me I was going to work release. I was going to be home. I was going to be able to skirt the system. And I remember the very first night sitting on my top bunk, and just because of what he did and how he worked on me the past previous 18 months incarcerated, I said to him, okay, Lord, you have me here for a reason. You got to show me. And he did. And he was faithful. And so I got exactly what I didn't want, and I got everything I needed. And that was just one example.
That's a great testimony to God's providence and sovereignty in your life.
Amen.
Yeah. Yeah, because we always have an idea as to what we think is going to work best for our lives, and then God shows up and says, no, I got something better.
Yeah, and it gets harder. I always say, I have a Christian counselor, and I say, you know, when the decision used to be, should I go to the strip club or go to church, that's pretty easy to know which is God's will. But as we get a little deeper in our walk with God, the decisions aren't quite that black and white. And it's very important to be close to God and have the counsel of other men and to be able to speak to them, because even my good intentions are not always what he wants for me. And I might be, you know, I might be thinking I'm doing it right and I think I have all the correct motives, but it's still his ways aren't always our ways. And much greater men in the Bible are given examples by that throughout Scripture. I love the fact of Scripture that hardly anybody but our Lord didn't come with lots of faults. Look at David. And so Scripture's full of men that didn't always do it right, but God was always faithful.
I have to say, Brian, not only is it nice to reconnect with you after many, many years, but I am amazed at the journey God has put you on and what has gone on in your life and the way you are walking with him now and staying faithful and strong. You've got a great routine. It's just been a real encouragement. I know a lot of the listeners will feel the same way. So thank you for doing the show.
Thank you for your time. Great connecting with you guys. Very much so.
Thanks, Brian. Great job.
Yeah.
Thanks, George.
And that wraps up another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Thanks for joining us tonight. I always look forward to this time with you, and George feels the same way. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.